information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care,
to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The collapse of WTC7 is, quote, no longer a mystery, end quote. These and other lies of the state will be covered on episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. It's August 22nd, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and revereradionetwork.com, your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It's Selection 08 and Denver DNC terror psyops, Horsey, Hillary, Obama, Antichrist, 9/11 mystery solved, Scott Forbes, The Matrix, Pandemic Labs, Bisphenol A, Fat Children, The Fourth Reich, Labor Camps, Recruitment Sex, Proxy Wars, Practice Surge, APAC, Codex, and Mind Control. It's episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com.
As I walk from your grave, moving back through the lies and the statements you made. So, we gotta get him. We gotta chill him. We gotta get him. We gotta kill him. You don't believe homeless vets exist.
Shut up.
You put a spin on everything like the Exorcist. You a lying coward, lost soul. Most statements you made are not so. That's how chicken hawks roll. I find the fact that you a Fox News asshole. Ironic, cause you never been in no foxhole. I hope that you rot slow. You and your talk show, no spin zone. That's a vertigo, infernal fire and brimstone. We seeing all you need, I call bullshit. Fuck a press room, you want the president pulpit. I cringe at your right wing lunatic friend. There's no elegant speech to shelter beliefs. Hate dominates like the shelter in the east. Michelle Markin wants a snitch like you're telling police. She ought to be shot, they gotta be stopped. Infrared the pillow around his head, there's a key spot. I'm not a violent man, but actually your blasphemy is badgering me. To blast you for your factual inaccuracy. Naturally, media matters to me. So we gotta shut down Fox News. That's the way it has to be.
I wipe the dirt from my hands as I walk from your grave. Moving back through the lies and the statements you made.
So we gotta get him. We gotta chill him. We gotta get him. We gotta kill him.
It's been a long rally. You only rallying me up.
Did this piece of human white waste O'Reilly on Fox News?
I leave you so scarred. Your corpse rock hard.
Dear boy, I'd like you to get your mouth off that conservative cock long enough to sit and talk it out. Scratch that. Let's backtrack. I stalk your house. Knock you out. Gag your mouth. Drag you out. Dog us out. I want to hurt you. Immerse you in torture. Fuck, make fun of you with punchlines. I'd rather kill your family in front of you by lunchtime.
A one-line execution in sunshine.
It's crunch time, let's take it to the front lines. Bless the union of marriage? Oh, that's classic. Dick in your hand, making phone calls to Andrea Macris. You got it backwards. Phone sex leading to threats to get a flat up on your mattresses. As sick as a list of adjectives put upon your favorite actresses in your book. No spin so grim. You borderline rapist, sexist, racist. Makeshift talking head celebrities that need a facelift.
I wipe the dirt from my hands as I walk from your grave. Moving back through the lies and the statements you made.
So, we gotta get him.
We gotta chill him.
We gotta get him.
We gotta kill him.
It's been a long rally. You only rallying me up.
I'm going to call on the Lord God Almighty to cause the death of Bill O'Reilly.
Shall I continue? I transcribed all your lies till my domicile. Separated all your letters like an underscore. I'm in your driveway like Bill, what you running for? You
want beef, but you never send your son to war. That's my favorite reason, but I got 100 more. You a political prostitute, a money whore. Your ass is upper class, saying that you come from poor backgrounds. You need to get smacked down with guns galore.
Something more hardcore, slash a flick, bash the bit, scattered. Your chitter chatter is littered with little that matters. You mad had a blabbering on, I'm deadpan, steady handed, kill you on a webcam. Body battered till I got red hands and leave a trail of dead fans. That's a YouTube number one download. Dump you at the end of your town's road. I hang you like Benito Mussolini if the ground's cold.
I wipe the dirt from my hands as I walk from your grave. Building facts, through the lies and the statements you made.
So,
we gotta get him, get him. We gotta chill him, chill him. We gotta get him, get him. We gotta kill him, kill him.
It'll be a long rally, you won't be rallying me up.
And you are that wrong if caught doing so. You're supposed to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, and then you're supposed to shut up.
Turn around, you black.
You're the worst person on the planet, credit yourself. You mutilated Malady, now you edit yourself. Plus your lawsuit proves a bill, you edit yourself. You're a sick man, you're better off dead in yourself. Hand left, maximum gone is like grand theft. Hand right, see the mic through the Antichrist chest. O'Reilly gets a shanking, he's a liar, falsifier. And I'm a wolf out for his blood till he retires.
I think Bill O'Reilly is everything that's wrong with this country.
The man is a Republican propaganda machine, and it's just a shame that he has so much influence over people.
He's a hypocrite because he puts his own spin on everything.
Bill O'Reilly, man, he's like a modern day Hitler for the media, man. I hate that dude, man. I can't stand
him. I'm really opposed to the death penalty, but I would love if someone just killed him.
Runners up the rap group East Coast Avengers. One of their new pick-to-click songs is entitled Kill Bill O'Reilly. Sampling it, as the kiddos say, you will find lyrics that call him a chicken hawk, a lying coward, a sexist, a racist, and a whore who, quote, needs a facelift. But the song also calls for him, quote, to be hanged like Benito Mussolini and otherwise killed. Gentlemen, I'm the last person to disagree with you on the chicken hawk, lying coward, sexist, racist, needs a facelift or stuff. But you really need to recut this track. Nobody's life should be threatened, not even in the hyperbole of the moment. Besides, you are rappers. You have better ethics than Bill O'Reilly does. Live up to them. Don't live down to him. Word to your mother.
A provocative new song from a little-known hip-hop group is making waves for advocating the murder of two well-known conservative icons, the East Coast Avengers. A Boston-based threesome last week leaked to the internet a copy of their new song, Kill Bill O'Reilly. The song's profane, sometimes crass lyrics don't dance around the band's desire to see the Fox News host killed. The band goes after many of O'Reilly's better-known controversies, such as the sexual harassment lawsuit he settled with a former producer, his claim that there was no such thing as a homeless veteran, and his defense of the Iraq War despite having never served in combat himself. At one point, the group also takes aim at right-wing blogger Michelle Malkin, causing her to remind them that she's ended her stint as an O'Reilly guest host. Conservative blog Newsbusters.org accuses the group of taking its talking points from liberal media watchdog Media Matters for America. First, here's the noteworthy part. First posted at a Wired blog last week, the controversial song seems aimed at drumming up some free publicity for the band's album, Prison Planet, to be released next month. The album title seems to be an homage to the website of the same name. PrisonPlanet.com's founder Alex Jones, a prominent conspiracy theorist who believes that 9/11 was an inside job, is listed as one of the East Coast Avengers' top friends on the group's MySpace page. MySpace.com/EastCoastAvengers. And we've also got the update where Olbermann defends O'Reilly. And that's how we're starting off episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 22nd, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org. And Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, RevereRadioNetwork.com. Thank God you can hear it on 95.3 KBFR in Boulder and 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. And you can make contact, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, and Skype, and all that. Media Monarchy is your keyword. That gets you to iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Archive.org struggling a little bit right now, but there's always a workaround. You'll always find the latest episode of MediaMonarchy.com. So yes, here we go. It's jam-packed. Things are heating up, my friends. As we wait with bated breath to see Obama choose Hillary as his running mate. I've said it before, I'll say it again, until the announcement comes out and I'm proven wrong, but we shall see, my friends, and I'll keep an eye peeled throughout the show. So, as long as we're now mentioning the presidential selection 08, all your favorite Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg, APAC candidates vying for your touchscreen black box vote. Here's an interesting one, though. This was breaking last night, Thursday, August 21st. McCain offices evacuated over suspicious letters, and wouldn't you know it, one of them was in Denver, home of the exploding police state and soon to be home of the DNC here in just a few days. Two of Senator John McCain's presidential campaign offices were evacuated Thursday after receiving suspicious letters, one of which contained an unidentified white powder. A government official said a letter sent to the office of the presumptive Republican presidential nominee near Denver contained powder, but was being treated as a hoax and was thought to have been sent by an inmate at a nearby jail in Arapahoe County.
A scary scene outside John McCain's campaign office in Colorado, just 4 days before the Democratic National Convention is set to begin in Denver. It all started late Thursday afternoon when a McCain staffer checked the mail.
We had a 911 call of from Senator McCain's office here that a letter was received and there was some white powder in it.
Firefighters, FBI agents, Secret Service agents, postal inspectors, and National Guard troops joined the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office to investigate. Meanwhile, some 19 people were either quarantined on site or taken to a local hospital for examination. None of them reported feeling sick or showed negative symptoms. Jim Kraft is a McCain volunteer. He was on his way to work at the office when he pulled up and saw this scene.
I'm just worried about my friends. People that work there, more than my coworkers, they are my friends. I'm just worried about them. That's the number one thing.
Investigators, covered head to toe in safety gear, gathered up the letter and powder, but preliminary tests showed there was little to worry about. That powder appears to be harmless, and investigators believe the letter was written by an inmate in the Arapahoe County Jail.
You know, anytime you send a threatening letter, and there was threatening language in the letter, that's a crime. And so law enforcement wants to take this very seriously.
Senator McCain, presidential candidate, DNC starting here in a couple of days. Yeah, we take it very seriously.
Investigators were still on the scene late Thursday night. Rich Matthews, The Associated Press, Centennial, Colorado.
There you have it. The latest threataganda centering around, wouldn't you know it, in Denver and the DNC. What did we have there last week? Some cyanide, I believe. And we've got more revelations coming up later in the show. But now let's jump to our man, our spoiler, Ralph Nader. Nader says what I've been saying. Nader says Obama will pick Hillary. According to Politico.com, Ralph Nader is telling people that he fully expects that Barack Obama will name Hillary Clinton as his running mate in the next few days. Nader suggests that Obama can't really pick anyone else, as all other available choices are uninspiring empty suits. I don't think he's that dumb, said Nader, commenting on widespread speculation that Obama's choices are down to Senators Joe Biden, Evan Bayh, or Virginia Governor Tim Kaine. The smart pick, according to Nader, is Hillary Rodham Clinton. Nader phoned into Politico Tuesday afternoon to offer his prediction that a surprise nod to Clinton is actually what Obama has in store, never mind the talk of mistrust between the Clintons and Obama. Quote, he just has to swallow hard and do what JFK did. And that would be picking rival Lyndon Johnson in 1960. And we know how that went. So, I think it'll be Hillary, although I wouldn't be surprised at all if it were my man from West Virginia, Jay Rockefeller. One, that'll get him the redneck West Virginia vote. and I'm born and bred West Virginia. I'm allowed to say that. And he's a Rockefeller. So we'll see. But now let's have another look. That's the thing. We can talk about all the WWF candidates and who's up and who's down and yada yada. But when it all comes down to what we vote on, it's a black box. Many states are already abandoning the touchscreen voting. So CBS has a report that as the U.S. prepares for the upcoming presidential election, many states are abandoning the electronic touchscreen ballots that have caused significant problems in the past. Representative Rush Holt, who we heard from recently, talking to Glenn Greenwald on the Salon podcast about the Amerithrax false flag PSYOP. Representative Rush Holt said that one-third of ballots cast will be unverifiable.
Less than 12 weeks before Election Day, the federal agency that oversees voting says it won't have time to check all the new machines states had planned to use. Some states have already unplugged their new touchscreen technology and turned back to paper ballots. And as Tony Guida reports, others are getting increasingly nervous.
When Americans vote November 4th to choose a new president, their confidence their vote will be counted might depend on where they live.
More than a third of the voters in this country will be voting in an unverifiable way.
New Jersey Congressman Rush Holt is talking about touchscreen voting machines with no paper backup. 14 states will be using them this fall. In addition, no touchscreen voting system has yet been certified to be free of flaws by the federal commission required to do that. The commission tells CBS News that rigorous new standards, as well as a backlog at testing laboratories, are responsible. In the past 5 years, states spent $2 billion of taxpayer money on new voting technology, much of it for touchscreen machines. Now states are abandoning them. Florida, whose infamous hanging chads 8 years ago began the rush to touchscreen voting, will have a whole new system this November. Paper ballots, optically scanned. Iowa and New Mexico are dropping touchscreens too. Maryland will get rid of them in 2 years.
What has happened since Florida 2000 is we've taken a problem that was a disaster for that election and made it exponentially worse.
But ES&S, the nation's leading manufacturer, says touchscreen voting machines have proven to be accurate, reliable, and secure time and time again. Nevertheless, states are preparing for the worst. Ohio has ordered enough paper ballots for a quarter of November's electorate.
If there's a machine failure or a power outage or some kind of misprogramming with the machine, it will enable people to keep voting.
But machine failure is not what worries the head of the government agency that oversees voting.
I think the equipment's going to be fine. What keeps me up at night are the other issues.
These issues, voters will be dealing with unfamiliar technology and new election laws in many states, and their ability to vote will hinge on brand new registration databases that may not be ready in all states. Add to that the widespread expectation for heavy voter turnout, and this November's election could prove to be a nightmare. Anthony?
Not again, we hope, Tony. Tony Guida, thanks.
And it's another classic case of problem, reaction, solution. They caused the problem of a screwed up election in 2000 with the aforementioned hanging chads. And we all say, oh, we give them the reaction they want to say, oh, we need reform. We got to do something about this. And they have the solution. All right. Black box voting brought to you by Diebold, Sequoia, ES&S, and others. So we'll just see what's in store. And as I think I've mentioned, I saw somewhere John McCain said, oh, I'll come back and win in the last 48 hours. So we'll see. Let's shift gears. I was doing my best to have the show kind of organized and thematic and have everything together, but as I get into Thursday night, I get overcome by all the news I'm trying to cover and put up on the page, so it's all a big mess, but it's all up on MediaMonarchy.com for you. So, shifting gears wildly to EnviroHealth, we got pandemic labs, food, nukes, BPA, and fat children. So first up from the Los Angeles Times, bacteria played a role in 1918 pandemic flu deaths. Most deaths in the 1918 influenza pandemic were due not to the virus alone, but to common bacterial infections that took advantage of victims' weakened immune systems, according to two new studies that could change the nation's strategy against the next pandemic being cooked up in a lab as we speak. We have to realize that it isn't just antivirals that we need, said Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and co-author of one of the studies. We need to make sure that we're prepared to treat people with antibiotics, said Dr. Anthony, whose study will be released online this month by the Journal of Infectious Diseases. In both studies, scientists analyzed a trove of historical documents from around the world, examining firsthand accounts, medical records, and autopsy reports. Writing about the 1918 influenza outbreak in the August issue of the journal Emerging Infectious Diseases, researchers reported that few deaths were swift, which is what scientists believe characterized a viral pandemic. Instead, they found most deaths occurred a week to 2 weeks later, indicating the deaths were the result of opportunistic bacterial infections. Now, there are some links in there, and as we've mentioned previously, they're recreating the 1918 influenza in a lab right now. And as we cover time and time again, the either willful or negligent or just plain corrupt and inept labs, but I don't think so. I don't believe in the incompetence theory. Whoops, it'll get out during a drill. So if we jump to FCW.com, Federal Computer Weekly, Carolina Group backs away from new lab. A North Carolina group is backing away from actively supporting sitting the proposed $450 million National Bio and Agro Defense Facility in that state. We've mentioned this in the last couple weeks. Georgia, Kansas, Mississippi, who seems to be tipped to get it, and Texas are also in the competition. We want the DHS to still consider us, but we will no longer do outreach and public education on the program. Consortium members are concerned that members of the Butner, North Carolina community claim that their worries about environmental effects and about the potential risk of pathogen release from the lab are not being adequately addressed. So if we jump to the Hartford Courant, labs that perform bioterrorism research proliferating. The number of individuals performing bioterrorism research on deadly pathogens across the country has jumped to nearly 15,000, and most of them are authorized to work with anthrax. The proliferation of labs working on vaccines for potential biological weapons. That's an interesting sentence we could break down. The proliferation of labs working on vaccines for potential biological weapons. So, if you're working on a vaccine, you must have what's going to be the problem. But that all started, of course, after 9/11 and the subsequent anthrax psyop. But it's drawn heavy criticism from experts worried that too many people have access to dangerous materials. The recent revelation that an American scientist, Bruce Ivins, was about to be charged as the anthrax mailer has only increased those concerns. We just went tearing down this road without thinking about the potential risks, including who was going to have access to all of these biological weapons, said Elisa Harris, a senior research scholar at the Center for International and Security Studies at the University of Maryland, with a link there, and you can check out some of her lengthy papers. Now, if we jump to Reuters, still staying on the EnviroHealth tip, U.S. food prices to post biggest rise since 1990. That's almost 20 years, kids. U.S. consumers should brace for the biggest increase in food prices in nearly 20 years in 2008 and even more pain next year due to surging meat and produce prices. Food prices are forecast to rise by 5-6% this year, making it the largest annual increase since 1990. Just last month, USDA forecast food prices would climb between 4.5-5.5% in 2008. It's a little bit of a surprise how strong some of the numbers were in July, USDA economist Ephraim Liebtag, who prepared the forecast, said in an interview. We've been waiting for some moderation, but especially with some of the meat prices and how much has come through relatively recently, leads me to believe the overall number may be a little higher for the year. Yada yada. The dollar has been devalued. It takes more dollars to buy things. If we jump to the Associated Press, more reason to worry. Labs, nuke plants, you know. Reactor shut down after fire at California nuke plant. Authorities are investigating a fire at a California nuclear plant that forced a reactor to be shut down. Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant spokeswoman Sharon Gavin said Monday that there was no danger of a radiation leak after a day, or rather after a fire the day before. The blaze was in a non-nuclear part of the plant. Gavin says one of the two reactors was shut down as part of a standard safety procedure. She doesn't know when it will be restarted. The plant started supplying electricity in 1985 and generates power for about 3 million homes in northern and central California. Diablo. China View, by way of blacklistednews.com, 49 babies die during clinical trials at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. As many as 49 babies, many of whom had not even celebrated their first birthday, have died at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences while being subjected to clinical trials for testing new drugs and therapies over the last 2.5 years. Responding to a right to information query on clinical trials on babies, the All India Institute administration admitted last Monday that of the 4,142 babies, 2,728 of whom were below the age of one, who were enrolled for clinical trials by the Institute's Department of Pediatrics, 49 had died since January 1st, 06. The department conducted 42 sets of trials on babies during this period. So that's more than a kid dead per trial. Testing new drugs on infants. But why not test it on newborns and others? With a dangerous chemical in your plastic bottles. Or sunglasses or CDs or household items, you know. We've covered bisphenol A, BPA, before. Walmart and Target love them. You do too. Because the FDA says bisphenol is okay for young and old. Associated Press once again. Despite ongoing safety concerns from parents, consumer groups, and politicians, a chemical used in baby bottles, canned foods, and other items is not dangerous, FDA scientists said. The trace amounts of bisphenol A that leach out of food containers are not a threat to infants or adults. The plastic hardening chemical is used to seal canned food and make shatterproof bottles. It's also used in hundreds of household items ranging from sunglasses to CDs. So drink your plastic. Drink it up good. Finally, on this Enviro Health tip from Times Online, out of the UK, fat children should be taken from their parents to curb obesity epidemic. Grossly overweight children may be taken from their families and put into care if Britain's obesity epidemic continues to escalate, council chief said yesterday. The local government association argued that parents who allow their children to eat too much could be as guilty of neglect as those who do not feed their children at all. The association said that until now there had been only a few cases when social services had intervened in obesity cases, but it gave warning that local councils may have to take action much more often and, if necessary, put obese children at risk registers or take them into care. It called for new guidelines to be drawn up to help authorities deal with the issue. Fat children.
They wobbled menacingly beneath the yellow street light. It became a situation. Well, I wanted my brand new phone with all the pictures of the kids and the wife, a struggling suit, and then fat children took my life. 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 I
particular reason. So I died in the back of the cab, but I'll be back to haunt them. This thing does not end here. My spirit walks the streets of Tottenham, singing, fat children took my life.
I knew I'd find a reason to play that track. That's Jarvis Cocker, Fat Children. If you're keeping score at home, that's the third track I've managed to play from that record. Fat Children, not taking lives, but being taken from their parents in the UK. Let's shift gears yet again, my friends, and get into some of the latest in the ever-crumbling official conspiracy theory of 9/11. We got NIST, WTC7, Scott Forbes, NTSB, Black Boxes, Office of Emergency Management, Neo in the Matrix, Flight 93, and tons more. So let's start it off with the latest that broke yesterday. NIST, and of course CNN, say that the WTC7 mystery is solved. Minor fires brought a 47-story steel skyscraper down in seconds. This from Jones Report. NIST wizards of Balderdash have now officially concluded that fire caused the swift, symmetrical collapse of WTC Building 7, offering essentially no explanation at all other than ruling out alternative explanations, which were not scientifically tested in their research, as not credible. CNN's Wolf Blitzer reports that WTC 7 building's collapse is mystery solved, showing footage of head NIST investigator Dr. Shyam Sunder making the claim that the 47-story steel skyscraper is the first in history of its kind to collapse, quote, mainly due to fire. Despite the fact that NIST's own report, previously leaked several weeks ago, we brought it to you, shows that the visible fires had all died out hours before the collapse, making it impossible for fire to be the cause.
I'm Will Klitzer. You're in the Situation Room. The Twin Towers of the World Trade Center weren't the only buildings that crumbled on September 11th, 2001. A neighboring building, the World Trade Center building number 7, also came down, but no one was sure why. Until now. Let's go to Deborah Farrick. She's working this story for us. Deb, what are the experts now saying?
Well, Wolf, there's a new report, and the findings come after 3 years of studying the collapse of Building 7 just across from the North Tower. This was done using complex computer models, detailed analysis, and eyewitness accounts. So why doesn't everyone buy it?
It has been a mystery since 9/11. Why did World Trade Center Building 7 collapse nearly 7 hours after the Twin Towers fell? Was it diesel fuel in the building? or planted explosives, a controlled demolition of government offices, as conspiracy theorists allege in films like Loose Change. A team of scientists and engineers authorized by Congress says there's only one answer, and it's conclusive.
The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fires. This is the first time that we're aware of that a building over 15 stories tall has collapsed primarily due to fire.
Shyam Sunder, the study's lead investigator, says fires ignited by falling debris from the towers burned so hot they created a phenomenon in which steel and concrete floors failed, causing floors to buckle and a key column to cave.
For the first time, we have shown that fire can induce a progressive collapse.
Fires burned out of control on 6 of 10 floors in Building 7, where New York City's multi-million dollar emergency command center had recently been built. And because the city's water main was cut when the towers fell, sprinkler systems in the building did not work. Still, conspiracy theorists and others were not swayed by the new findings.
I hear quite a number of bare assertions here.
Investigators say they did consider certain so-called conspiracy theories, but none held up.
Alternative theories are really, none of them have been found to be credible.
Fire expert Glenn Corbett analyzed the Trade Center collapse and says the new report could be used to make high-rises safer.
I'm hoping that the next steps will be to actually make changes to buildings to improve them for the future, and that's really what the most important thing out of this whole investigation is.
Now, the lead investigator said if someone like a conspiracy theorist were to step forward with genuine science to support any other conclusion, they'll consider it. But right now, these men and women are confident they have their answer. Well,
all right, good. Thanks very much, Deb. Meanwhile, work continues on the World Trade Center site. So far, foundations have been completed for the Freedom Tower and the two other buildings. Plans call for a total of 5 new skyscrapers, along with 9/11 memorial, a 9/11 memorial and a museum. Work is scheduled to be completed by 2012 with a current budget of $15 billion.
Thanks, Wolf. Now, I have a lot of links in that story, so you can read up on some of the debunking of the debunking. But I'm going to leave that to you, because we're going to jump on to another one. You may not know this one. There's a guy named Scott Forbes, and he says there were power downs for approximately 36 hours in the South Tower of the World Trade Center the weekend prior to 9/11, the 8th and the 9th. The power down conditions meant that for the floors of his company, Fiduciary Trust, which you can link to and read about on the complete 9/11 timeline, operated on floors 90 and 94 to 97, there was no electricity, meaning CCTV cameras were out of operation and security doors were unlocked. Despite contacting the 9/11 Commission through their website and by mail, Scott Forbes was never acknowledged or contacted. So we got a little clip of Scott Forbes talking in the new documentary, The Elephant in the Room.
Okay, I worked in the World Trade Center from 98 until 9/11 in 2001. My interest in the whole issue of a conspiracy for 9/11 is based on fact that there was a power down in the South Tower on the weekend of the 8th and 9th of September. I worked on it. I was in the tower at the time, so I know for a fact it occurred, along with many colleagues.
I was at home on the day of 9/11, witnessing the events from my apartment because of the requirement to work on the weekend prior to 9/11. I was sitting in my chair having coffee, and I heard a noise which sounded to me like a very heavy truck hitting a bump in the road and like bouncing. So the noise was like bum 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 bum, like that. So I got up and went to the window and looked between the Venetian blinds down to the road, and there was nothing. So then I just looked up, and in the North Tower I saw smoke coming out from a high floor. At this point, I was hanging out of my bedroom window. I'd pulled the window up and the blinds, and I was hanging out of the window on the phone, and from the corner of my eye to my right, I saw the plane coming in, the second plane. It came in from over New Jersey, Staten Island way, and it came almost entirely across the Statue of Liberty, quite an angle, into the tower, and it was coming down as well. I saw the South Tower go down just before 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe my eyes. It looked like a fantasy film. What I saw was the building crumbling, like sand. I remember thinking it looked like sand, and instinctively, the thought went through my head, well, what did we do at the weekend? I didn't believe my eyes, and I didn't understand it either. And, you know, within 20, 25 seconds, where our offices had stood, there was just air and smoke. So we worked on the Saturday morning, shutting everything down, handed over to the Port Authority, and it was handed back to us on the Sunday afternoon. So there was a period of probably 30 hours where there was no power. Right, and it wouldn't have just affected the camera security. It would have affected all the secure systems on doors for either key locks or security badges and so on to undo them. They weren't working because they're all powered by electricity, so there was no power, there was no backup system, therefore they were all open. I guess my big thing is I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't like to be labeled like that. The information that I want acknowledged is factual. And it's simple. So, you know, I don't have any clarion call for anybody. I just want the truth to be acknowledged and explained.
Sorry, that clip got a little messy, but you can watch that clip up on 9/11 Blogger. Now, Scott Forbes, like we said, worked for Fiduciary Trust, and he said he wasn't at work that day. Another person who was one of the heads of Fiduciary Trust was Ann Tatlock. She was chilling with Warren Buffett and others at Offutt Air Force Base on the morning of 9/11, just one of the spots that Bush happened to hit while he was crisscrossing around the country. They brought Ann Tatlock in and said, hey, look, you work there. But let's jump now to Len Hart and Existentialist Cowboy. He's got an article up on the NTSB flight data on Flight 77. NTSB data indicates Flight 77 never dropped below 273 feet. Therefore, Flight 77 couldn't have crashed into the Pentagon. The Pentagon is only 71 feet tall. Secondly, according to the black box data, Flight 77 could not have damaged the light poles. 77 was much too high and on the wrong trajectory. Dare we hope that this is the wooden stake driven into the heart of vile, evil, official lies about 9/11? Probably not. Data released by the NTSB in response to a FOIA request by pilotsfor911truth.org are nothing less than the raw black box, or rather, block box, file, the official flight data recorded from Flight 77. It's a digital record of everything that happened on that flight from takeoff. Additionally, altitude and position are confirmed by the beacon at nearby Reagan National Airport. And the data proves, of course, that the U.S. government is lying to us about 9/11. But a little more on flight data recorders. There's an old clip making the rounds yet again of our man Dan Rather on 9/11, who made lots of astute observations on 9/11. But here's a quick clip of Dan Rather announcing that Rudolph Giuliani has found one of the flight data recorders.
A video now of New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani holding up what he says is one of the flight recorder boxes recovered from the debris around the World Trade Center. If this turns out to be the case, this is a big breakthrough for investigators. And I'm told we have a technical problem with the videotape. Can't play it for you just yet. But this would be, if not a bulletin of the hour, certainly an urgent on anybody's news wire. That Mayor Giuliani says and holds up what he says is one of the flight recorder boxes. We'll be trying to show you that video shortly.
Aw, technical difficulties, damn. What are the odds? Sorry we don't have that clip for you. But speaking of Giuliani, here's another one. WTC7's OEM bunker unmanned on 9/11. In 1999, New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani constructed a $13 million emergency command retreat on the 23rd floor of World Trade Center Building 7, an armored, self-contained facility designed to provide a safe haven for leadership in the event of a natural disaster or terrorist attack. But several first responders interviewed after 9/11 claimed that the Office of Emergency Management Emergency Operations Center was empty and, quote, deactivated. As early as 9 a.m. on the morning of 9/11, a time when just such an emergency was in full swing. If we jump now to the freelance star brought to me from military.com, 9/11 Memorial Shankstown's name. The Pennsylvania Department of Highways website notes that the 9/11 crash of United Flight 93 put Shanksville on the international map of terrorism. Unfortunately, that worldwide reputation hasn't been enough to keep the southwestern Pennsylvania borough's name from being misspelled. Media outlets have done it, bloggers have done it, even the Justice Department did it in a news release 8 days after 9/11, adding an extra E. And now, that mistake is literally carved in stone. So there's a little bit of light 9/11 news for you. Hoodwinked in Shanksville yet again. And finally, here's an interesting one recently discovered. I'm glad they find it, but damn, somebody's got some time on their hands. But this comes from Truth News, but it's all over the place. Neo's passport in The Matrix expires on 9/11/2001. This is Aaron Dykes. Insiders love bragging to one another about being on the inside. Perhaps that's one explanation for an abundance of Illuminati symbolism in mainstream media and corporate logos. Among the interesting references to 9/11 that have been uncovered in the media released before 9/11 is a passport for Neo in the blockbuster film The Matrix, released in 1999. The passport in Neo's file shows an expiration date of 11-SEP-01, seemingly now an eerie coincidence found in the smallest of details. The article goes on to mention, of course, when the Simpsons are going to get Homer's car from the World Trade Center, Lisa holds up the flyer that shows that they can go to New York for $9, and it's a big 9, and the two towers make the 11. And of course, we should never forget the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, Chris Carter, creator of The X-Files, the spinoff, first episode, rogue elements with inside the government, under the guise of a drill, hijack remote control commercial airliners to crash them into the World Trade Center to kickstart the clash of civilizations. Now, someone who knows a lot about this, and I actually just picked this book up, it's Jim Mars. His new book is called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. He is, of course, the author of Crossfire and Rule by Secrecy. Crossfire, of course, put together with On the Trail of the Assassins, turned into Oliver Stone's JFK. And it's from HarperCollins, so that's important to note. This isn't, it's not on a small run. It's on a publisher that's big enough to where it guarantees virtually that everything in the book is completely sourced and proven and documented. Because publishers like HarperCollins can't put out crazy conspiracy theories. They would be sued. So this, from the press release for Jim Mars' new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, from HarperCollins.com, throw out everything you think you know about history, close the approved textbooks, turn off the corporate mass media, and whatever you do, don't believe anything you hear from the government. The Rise of the Fourth Reich reveals the truth about American power. In this explosive new book, the legendary Jim Mars, author of the underground bestseller Rule by Secrecy, reveals the frighteningly real possibility that today the United States is becoming the Fourth Reich, the continuation of an ideology thought to have been vanquished more than half a century ago.
Well, that's, of course, that's, yeah, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. And interestingly enough, what you'll read in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is that the very night that the British royal family member and officer who was going to fly with Hess for the peace treaty and was killed in the subsequent plane crash, he had dinner with Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, which I don't know if that proves that there was some connection between Barnhart and the crash, but it certainly shows that the level at which this global politicking was taking place.
Yeah, so and everything you're hearing is admitted historical fact. Understand,
this is all documented fact.
This is not debatable. That's why Hitler at Dunkirk let the British evacuate and only put on a small show with Goering and some aircraft bombing with Stukas.
The game plan was for Britain to ally with Germany and to stop communism. But once Hitler had stopped the communists in the summer of 1941... He was triple-crossed, and they turned on him because they did not want a global national socialist system either. They wanted a balkanized system of socialist nations that they could play off against each other.
And that is the great game, the great game of the invisible British Imperium.
Exactly. It's all mega politics, and then they decided that because of the wealth and because of the vast amount of resources in the United States, they would simply move operations to the United States. So they came over here, they began to buy up corporations. The bigger the corporations got, the more they bought up. They
and then suddenly, by 1947, our military gets death sets put on their tanks and uniforms. Everything starts shifting. They bring symbol of fasci into the Senate. It all converts.
That's right. And today we see our troops are wearing the Nazi coal scuttle helmets, which they dubbed the Fritz. We see Imperial Eagles all over on our postage stamps and in our advertisements and in symbols of the government.
An eagle drawn by Hitler. He drew the eagle. He drew the first Volkswagen, the people's car. He drew the Olympic rings. It is all the mind of Adolf Hitler. And then let's expand on that. Because if you compartmentalize it down to just the Vatican, or you compartmentalize it just down to the British Imperium, you compartmentalize it, and then they win again. We have the Zionists funding and helping Hitler and demanding ransoms from Jews to leave, having Jews in New York lobby to not let Jews. This is all mainline history. Big Jewish scholars written about it, not to leave Germany, only to go to Palestine in the build-up there with the British then and the Rothschilds. And so then when you look at this, it is a master plan with interbred Nazis, British, and Zionists together, and they're all occultists at the top. And then meanwhile, most of our movement fights about whether it's Protestants, Jews, Catholics, any of this, when all the people themselves are good. It's evil at the top of every major mechanism.
That's essentially correct. And if you don't go along, well, then they buy you out. And if that doesn't work, then they come and intimidate you out. And if that doesn't work, then they just kill you. It's Nazi methodology.
That's Jim Mars talking to Alex Jones about his new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. You can watch and listen to all of that almost hour-long interview. It's all linked up for you on MediaMonarchy.com. So, shifting now to Time magazine. Elderly women sent to Chinese re-education / labor camp. Two Beijing women in their late 70s have been sentenced to a year of administrative detention after applying to protest in the Chinese capital's Olympic protest zones. The two women, former neighbors, who are upset about being forcibly evicted from their homes in 2001. This month, they visited the Beijing police five times to apply to hold a demonstration in one of the officially sanctioned protest areas established for the Olympic Games. But instead of being granted that right, on August 17th, they were ordered to serve 1 year of, quote, re-education through labor. One of the sons says, "I'm extremely angry. For a common person to be sentenced to this, it's very sad." And isn't that a nice trick? They set up the sanctioned free speech zones, but when you have the nerve to actually apply, you get arrested. It kind of reminds me of how when they were working on outlawing marijuana, they said, "Oh, no, it's not illegal, you just got to get a stamp." "No, we don't have the stamp." If we jump to the Sacramento Bee, this is a disturbing one, and it shows that corruption is all around. However, just like when we see some cops beating and tasering people, or all the corruption and evil that goes on, it isn't everyone. It is bad rogue elements within. Unfortunately, it seems like they're infesting and infecting everyone else. Marine Corps recruiter arrested and accused of having sex with a high school girl. A Marine Corps recruiter was arrested on August 20th on suspicion of having sex with a minor he met at a job fair. Sergeant Victor Sanchez Milan, 23, of Stockton, California, faces charges of unlawful sex with a minor and unlawful communication with a minor, according to police and Marine Corps officials. Sanchez Milan had been assigned, to a recruiting station in Roseville. Lincoln police arrested Sanchez Milan on Wednesday at a recruiting station in Sacramento County and later booked him into Placer County Jail. The arrest came after officials began investigating what the father of the alleged victim, a 17-year-old girl, said has been a nightmare for a family with a strong military tradition.
Now, another disappointing story. A local Marine recruiter behind bars tonight busted for having sex with a teenage girl.
Mike Alistrita live in Placer County with the tales on what police say happened here. Mike?
Lincoln cops said this Marine recruiter met this 17-year-old girl at her school, Lincoln High. They say it happened at a career fair, a job fair that would have been months ago before the end of last school year. And their alleged relationship stayed a secret until just last week. The few, the proud, the Marine busted. 23-year-old Marine recruiter Victor Sanchez Milan accused of having sex with a 17-year-old Lincoln High School student.
He was in a position of trust, a position of authority, and a position that is normally respected.
Sanchez Milan worked out of this office off Douglas Boulevard in Roseville. The girl's family says they found out about the relationship and called Lincoln cops a week ago. Then, a quick investigation targeting an unlikely suspect, an enlisted Marine.
The Marine Corps staff was a very cooperative assistance with the investigation.
Lincoln detectives picked up Sanchez Milan at the Marine recruiting office, not at his home base in Roseville, but here in Sacramento off of Northgate.
Disgusting. It's sad because it's the Marines.
Lorenzo Lewis works right next door to the Marine office where cops made the arrest.
They always talking about all these, you have to stand up and be proud to be a Marine, but how can you be proud to be a Marine when you're trying to mess with a 17-year-old girl?
Now, that 17-year-old girl is headed back to school, and the Marine sits in jail facing several serious charges, including unlawful sex with a minor.
And maybe the only people more disgusted by these allegations and this girl's parents would be the fellow military men and women in uniform. They're disgusted by this, but certainly not going on camera. They say that uniform stands for a lot, for honor, for integrity, for courage, and to say this is a big disappointment is certainly an understatement tonight.
You said it, Mike. Thanks so much.
You're listening to Episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster. It's August 22nd, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and Revere Radio Network. If we look abroad now and know the equation, U.S. plus Poland times Russia plus Syria equals bad news. U.S. and Poland finalized deal to install a missile shield. This from the Washington Post. The United States and Poland signed an agreement to place parts of a U.S. missile defense system on Polish territory, finalizing a long-negotiated deal in the face of Russian warnings that Poland would become a potential target for attack. At a signing ceremony with the Polish political leadership, Condi Rice, USS Condoleezza, said the system, which will place 10 missile interceptors and more than 100 U.S. troops here, will, quote, help us to respond to the threats of the 21st century. And there is a related one there. Jump into danger room. Fighting words as U.S. and Poland sign missile defense deal. However, the flip side then is Syria signs defense pact with Russia. This from the Times Online. Syria sought to revive its security alliance with Russia when President Bashar al-Assad arrived in Moscow to clinch a series of military agreements, raising fears that the new Cold War that has erupted in the Caucasus will spill into the Middle East. Our position is that we are ready to cooperate with Russia in any project that can strengthen its security, the Syrian leader told a Russian newspaper at the start of his two-day trip. Quote, I think Russia really has to think of the response it will make when it finds itself closed in a circle. More news from Barksdale Air Force Base out of Louisiana. I've lost track of their scandals. They're running neck and neck with Minot in North Dakota. But this week, it's Barksdale's turn. Barksdale B-52s and their practice surge, also known as Operation Green Flag. So, from the Shreveport Times, people who live near or around Barksdale Air Force Base may notice an increase in noise Thursday and Monday, installation representatives say. Early Thursday, that was yesterday, a dozen B-52 bombers will practice for a, quote, surge, where bombers take off in quick succession. The real MITO, or minimum interval takeoff, will be held at the base early Monday, this coming Monday. This is in addition to increased noise and activity associated with green flag exercises involving German fighter jets that have occurred over the past few weeks. And I've said time and time again, we pay attention to the drills in the war games because a lot of times they go live. Maybe not instantly, but maybe soon thereafter. Whether it's the drills on 9/11 or 7/7, or the war games like Operation Brimstone that preceded the current U.S.-Russia proxy war in Georgia. But let's move to Israeli espionage. Declassified documents shed new light on AIPAC espionage. This from the Sun Herald. More than 1,000 documents released under Freedom of Information Act filings reveal details of a secret battle that raged between founders of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, and top U.S. law enforcement officials. The new book, America's Defense Line, The Justice Department's Battle to Register the Israel Lobby as Agents of a Foreign Government. That's a hell of a title. America's Defense Line reproduces and analyzes these files and their troubling implications for rule of law in the U.S. America's Defense Line also reveals stunning details of a preferential deal engineered within the highest levels of the U.S. Department of Justice over the course of 3 years and implemented in 1965, but kept secret from the American public until today. Old documents and new analysis from the Center for Policy and Law Enforcement raise many questions about the upcoming October 2008 AIPAC espionage trial, including our man, or maybe it doesn't. I've lost track. They keep postponing the trial. It's going to go on, and then it doesn't. But it's Larry Franklin, AIPAC spy. Jumping again to Danger Room over on Wired. Army Eyes Invisibility Cloak. After 2 years of rapid scientific progress, the U.S. Army is getting closer to mastering man-made metamaterials that can bend light around an object. That's right, flip of the switch invisibility is around the corner, which means insane, invisible, rampaging scientists a la Kevin Bacon and Hollow Man can't be far behind. Okay, seriously. According to Dr. Richard Hammond from the Army Research Office, the military is 2 or 3 years away from being able to manufacture devices using metamaterials that allow, quote, unprecedented extreme control over the flow of light. And not just that. In theory, the materials could deflect radar and other sensors, too. So just a peek at the mad science going on in the military-industrial complex. The Washington Post has it up. Citizens' U.S. border crossings tracked. And they keep the data for 15 years. The federal government has been using its system of border checkpoints to greatly expand a database on travelers entering the country by collecting information on all U.S. citizens crossing by land. Compiling that data will be stored for 15 years and may be used in criminal and intelligence investigations. Officials say the Border Crossing Information System, which was quietly disclosed last month by the Department of Homeland Security in a Federal Register notice, it's part of a broader effort to guard against terrorist threats. It also reflects the growing number of government systems containing personal information on Americans that can be shared for a broad range of law enforcement and intelligence purposes, some of which are exempt from some Privacy Act protections. The Privacy Act of 1974. So there's links there. You can read about the Privacy Act and check out the Federal Register, where you can maybe keep an eye on things that slip by. But now we return to the lefty I love to hate. He does such good work, but I know he's just doing it while the Bush administration's in, and it's all their fault, but when we get a Democrat, everything will be a-okay. Keith Olbermann. Bush creating embryonic police state.
And number one, in case that's not direct enough, domestic spying gate. Now that the Democrats were nice enough to fold up on FISA, the issue is all contained now, right? Not exactly. The Justice Department wants to revise the federal government's rules for intelligence gathering by state and local police, making it easier to share anything those police find about U.S. citizens with the federal government and all the intelligence agencies, to let all those federal agencies retain all that information for as much as a decade. Not that the local police would be able to do anything about it if they didn't like it, since this would apply to all 18,000 local agencies who get any kind of funding for the feds. The point of this? To increase our security and counter terror threats? No. To pass these changes before Mr. Bush leaves office so that the next president can't do a damned thing about unraveling this disaster, which is, appropriately enough, an embryonic police state.
Olbermann should take Obama to task for his FISA betrayal. This from Curt Nimmo. Earlier this week, Keith Olbermann complained about FISA and the Justice Department's proposed changes on domestic snooping. We just heard it. It was nice to hear Olbermann excoriate the government for creating a, quote, embryonic police state. Never mind the suckers beyond gestation and growing in our midst like a tenacious weed. However, jumping down a little bit, Obama showed his real, or rather, Olbermann... Olbermann showed his real colors. He said the next president, assumed to be Obama, as Olbermann is a Democrat, will be saddled with the Bush intelligence embryo. Keith made it sound like Obama disapproves, and the already long-established and well-developed Snoop state apparatus will be a yoke around his neck. In fact, remember, Obama voted in the Senate for the current FISA bill. To the chagrin of no shortage of Democrats, many now finally coming around and realizing there is no difference between Democrats and Republicans, and if you turn them upside down, they all look alike. Under Democrat Lyndon Johnson, who we mentioned earlier, the Snoop State flourished from COINTELPRO to the CIA's Operation Chaos and beyond. At this time, there was an impression given to the intelligence community of get the job done, regardless of the methods. And what ties that all together is an article on Global Research, COINTELPRO and Domestic Spying, Slippery Slope Towards Police State Methods, as, of course, Mukasey loosens the guidelines. If we move to the world of geopolitics, we got the Afghanistan surge, false flags, PAC, and Blackwater. First from Danger Room, 12,000 more troops to Afghanistan surge. The Pentagon will be sending 12 to 15,000 additional U.S. troops to Afghanistan, possibly as soon as the end of this year, U.S. News is reporting. For more than a year, everyone from General McKiernan to Senator Barack Obama has been calling for extra troops in Afghanistan. But the Pentagon brass said it couldn't be done until forces were pulled out of Iraq. Does this mean that a partial withdrawal from Iraq is coming? Judiciary Committee to investigate plot to paint plane in UN colors and provoke a shootdown over Iraq. This is from Steve Watson over at Infowars.net. As part of a major examination into the evidence that the Bush administration forged intelligence documents to justify the invasion of Iraq, the House Judiciary Committee will also look into various considerations, plots, and attempts to provoke war, including the idea of goading Saddam Hussein to shoot down a mock UN plane. House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers has announced that he and his staff will investigate the evidence most recently collated and presented by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Suskin in his book, The Way of the World, A Story of Truth and Hope in an Age of Extremism. I believe that's our third consecutive mention of revelations in Ron Suskin's book, The White House Torture Room, The Lies. According to a press release earlier this week, Conyers' office will examine, quote, reported examples of the Bush administration considering other deceptive schemes to justify or provoke war with Iraq, such as the reported consideration of painting a U.S. aircraft with U.N. colors in order to provoke Iraq into military confrontation. And we just had the revelation from Hirsch a couple weeks ago that Cheney wanted to paint up military like Iranians and have a shoot-up. But they would never do something like 9/11. Jumping over to Winter Patriot. the man I share a birthday with, Pervez Musharraf, he's out. Panic and jubilation in the wake of Pervez Musharraf's resignation. Now that Pakistan's president, Pervez Musharraf, has resigned, we can expect a tidal wave of propaganda, some of it deliberately false, some well-meaning but still false, about how nervous we should be for our future. After all, Pakistan has terrorists and nuclear weapons, and only Pervez could keep them apart. Or so the story goes. We've been hearing variations of this story for years, but it's still only a story. We get it from the right and from the left, with links for you. Let's attack Pakistan. We were attacked on 9/11 by terrorists from Pakistan. Pakistan's going ballistic, and we don't even have anyone left in our government who knows anything about Pakistan, let alone somebody in a position to do something. Obama said it. We might have to go into Pakistan. Finally, some kind of good news here on the geopolitical tip out of Iraq. This from Press TV. We must prosecute Blackwater. A top Iraqi official says Baghdad will keep its right to prosecute U.S. private contractors who have committed crime in the Iraqi territory. There is information that six Blackwater guards are to be tried in Washington, an Iraqi government spokesman said last Sunday. The Iraqi government stresses that Blackwater has committed a crime, and the Iraqi government retains the right to prosecute the company. So his remarks came after the U.S. Justice Department sent what are called target letters to six security guards involved in the deadly shooting from last year that we covered. The move indicates a, quote, high likelihood the department will seek to indict at least some of them, Washington Post said last Saturday. Getting into a little bit more of the proxy war, some updates, U.S., Georgia, and Russia. Again, from Danger Room, how Israel trained and equipped Georgia's army. The Russian military blasted Israel today for supplying weapons and training its adversaries in Georgia. Israel armed the Georgian army, Russian Deputy Chief of General Staff General Anatoly Nilgitsyn, and he told a Moscow press conference. Jerusalem provided Tbilisi with, quote, eight types of military vehicles, explosives, landmines, and special explosives for the clearing of minefields. In 2007, Israeli experts trained Georgian commandos, he added. Georgia's Deputy Defense Minister Batu Kotelia previously said that, quote, Georgian corporals and sergeants train with Germans, Alpine units in the Navy work with French instructors, and special ops and urban warfare troops are taught by the Israelis. Tensions between Georgia and Russia ratcheted up the spring after Russia and her allies in the breakaway region of Abkhazia shot down a number of Georgian spy drones. I mangled that breakaway region. Now, here's an odd one. I'm not sure what to make of it. You have to watch the video of it. But the Georgian president, Mikhail Saakashvili, eats his tie.
A ceasefire is agreed between Russia and Georgia, raising hopes of an end to the conflict. The Georgian president chews over his next move. Is he weaker or stronger than before?
The BBC has recently aired a TV report in which Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili ate his tie. The report was about the situation in the area of conflict between Georgia and South Ossetia. The footage showed Saakashvili making a call to a top Western official. It could be clearly seen that Mr. Saakashvili was having a nervous breakdown. That's from Pravda. There's a great article from William Ingdahl up on thepeoplesvoice.org. It's called The Puppet Masters Behind Georgian President Saakashvili. However, we're going to jump to the Times Online. Cross us and we'll crush you. President Medvedev of Russia yesterday promised a, quote, shattering blow against any foreign power that moved against Russian citizens. The threat will compound the fears of former Soviet states, which are concerned that they could be next after Russia's attack on Georgia. If someone thinks they can kill our citizens, kill soldiers and officers fulfilling the role of peacekeepers, we will never allow this, Mr. Medvedev told a group of Second World War veterans in Kursk. Anyone who tries to do this will receive a shattering blow. Now, returning to Deputy Chief of the Russian General Staff, Anatoly Nogovitsyn. Need to practice. Russian General says Georgia may commit false flag attacks. This from Paul Joseph Watson. Nogavitsyn warns that Georgia may be planning to commit false flag terror attacks by using mercenaries dressed in Russian uniforms as Russia moved to guard sensitive infrastructure against terrorist attacks. In a news briefing last Monday, with a link over to RussiaToday.com, he said, quote, "I cannot rule out that they might use mercenaries with Slavic appearance for a provocation, clad in the uniform of Russian servicemen, in order to commit subversive acts both on Ossetian and Russian territory." False flag attacks. One of their favorite tools. And I think 9/11 Truth and alternative media in general have been able to shine a light on false flag terror and break it. Now, I have nary the time for mentions anymore of the man Ron Paul, campaignforliberty.com. The Freedom Rally is coming up in Minnesota. However, showing yet again that Ron Paul knows what's up, let's go back, way back to 2002. So here's Ron Paul and Bill Moyers in 2002 with a little prediction.
Congressman, what do you think about the president's new policy of preemptive first strikes?
I think that is serious. In the committee today, as we were marking up this bill, those who were pushing the resolution worked real hard to say, this has nothing to do with preemptive strikes. And I made a statement, I think I said, this is what it's all about, is to establish and institutionalize the preemptive strikes. Although we have done that off and on in minor degrees over the years, this one is much more open and much more declared and a much bigger issue. And that's what this is all about. A preemptive strike. I think that is so dangerous, not only to us as a people and to our rule of law and our Constitution, but I believe that will come back to haunt us because it has already started because the Russians now say, aha, what you're doing is nothing compared to what we want to do. We want to go into Georgia and because you say there's terrorists and the Iraqis are possible terrorists. That's why we want to go into Georgia and we want you to approve it. And that's why they're looking to maybe give in a little bit to us if we ignore what they do in Georgia.
There's Ron Paul in 2002 saying a policy of preemptive strikes could let, you know, Georgia and Russia go at it. However, as we pointed out before, Russia did not attack Georgia unprovoked. And we're going to get to that here in just a second, but here's one from Raw Story. The president of Turkey has thrown in. Turkish press says U.S. must share power in a new world order. For controversial Turkish President Abdullah Gül, the recent war in Georgia signals a new world order that will emerge from the rubble of South Ossetia and force the United States to share its power. This coming from The Guardian. Gül said America's inability to prevent Russia's invasion shows that the U.S. can no longer shape world politics as it once did. I don't think you can control all the world from one center, Gould said. There are big nations. There are huge populations. There is unbelievable economic development in some parts of the world. So what we have to do is, instead of unilateral actions, act all together, make common decisions, and have consultations with the world. A new world order, if I can say it, should emerge. There it is again. The new world order. A big idea. If we hit Brass Check TV, they've got a nice little breakdown. What really happened in Georgia? Here's some basic facts in 5 points. 1. The citizens of South Ossetia have long expressed a desire to break away from Georgia and, in fact, declared themselves independent from Georgia in the 1990s. 2. On the first day of the 2008 Olympics 888, Georgia launched an all-out shock and awe attack on numerous civilian targets in Shigvali, the capital of South Ossetia. 3. Russia, which shares a border and a long historical connection with South Ossetia, sent troops into the region to fight back the attacking Georgian military. 4. The arms for Georgia's attack on South Ossetia were largely provided by the U.S. 5. The U.S. and U.K. news media have successfully managed to portray these events as a random, unprovoked, and savage attack on Georgia by Russia. So, here's the first of one who would know, the former president, Mikhail Gorbachev, on Larry King.
Peace Prize back in 1990, wrote a Washington Post op-ed earlier this week titled "The Path to Peace in the Caucasus." Mr. President, thank you for joining us. We'll get right into it. The president of Georgia told CNN yesterday that we've been witnessing the past few days the brutal, calculated, cold-blooded, premeditated murder by Russia of a small democracy. How do you respond?
Well, this is all lies from beginning to end. And I really think this is really beyond comprehension. I have heard the opinion of Edward Shevardnadze. He knows what the situation is on their side. So it was all at night, a little past midnight, when the city was asleep. Then from all sides it was shelled with shells of enormous power. They used artillery, they used aircraft, they used all weapons of killing. And this is really amazing. Синдали, in fact, was devastated by fire from multiple rocket launchers against people, against housing, against hospitals, against water and sanitation, against the energy and communication infrastructure. All of that was destroyed. The old monuments were destroyed, and they were among the oldest in the Caucasus. The ancestral graves were ruined, were then trampled by tanks.
Mr. President, excuse me, you are saying that Georgia started this?
Yes, indeed, there is no doubt about it.
So, that's Mikhail Gorbachev. He would probably know. Related to that, though, there's a detailed analysis of the U.S.'s provocations in Georgia published about a month ago on globalresearch.ca. It's called Georgia, Washington, Moscow, a nuclear geopolitical poker game. Well, we're going to jump to one from Op-Ed News, readjustments in Pipelineistan. Georgia has long been viewed as an alternative, indeed the only alternative, to trans-Russia transport of Central Asian oil and gas to Western markets. To that end, the crown jewel of the movement was the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan oil pipeline, BTC, which saw its opening in May of 2006. Initially, Russia expressed resistance to the BTC pipeline, but viewed it as a predictable competition to its near monopoly on European petroleum delivery, uttering only the occasional diatribe against the project. And it went along that way. Until now. Now, the moronic military move by Saakashvili has entirely jeopardized his country's unique strategic situation, causing untold concern for oil markets, producers, and foreign investors. Now, most utterances by the Washington circuit are meant for Western and especially American public consumption, which means they don't generally comport with reality. And I'll remind you, there was an article we hit previously called "It's All About the Pipelines." Now, finally, here in this proxy war update, we said someone like former President Mikhail Gorbachev would be someone who would know, but here's someone else who would know. A 12-year-old girl, an Ossetian American, she was on Fox. So, here's the clip. 12-year-old girl tells the truth about Georgia, so Fox cuts her off.
There are thousands of people who have been displaced as a result of the war in Georgia. Tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands, if you believe reports. Among the unfortunate civilians caught in the crossfire in this conflict, a 12-year-old girl from outside San Francisco, Amanda Kokoyeva, was in South Ossetia for a month and a half long visit with her relatives. She was with family members in a cafe, and all of a sudden, bombs were falling outside. A 12-year-old girl. She spent the night in her uncle's basement. She was able to flee to Russia, flee to the north, catch a flight home from Moscow. With us now, Amanda Kokoyeva and her aunt Laura, live with us from our San Francisco bureau. It's great to see you. Welcome home.
Thank you.
I cannot even imagine sitting in a cafe and bombs start falling. I mean, I've been to wars where that happens, but when you were there, there wasn't really a war happening. It started when you were there. Describe for us what that was like.
It was really scary. I didn't know what was happening. We were just sitting normally, and everybody from outside started running in, and it was just so scary.
Where did you go? What did you do?
We called my uncle on the restaurant house phone because our cell phones weren't working. And so we called him, and he came to pick us up and drove us to his house. We ended up spending the night in the basement.
Were there bombs falling all the while?
I didn't see any. But before I say anything else, I just want to say that I was running from Georgian troops bombing our city, not Russian troops. I want to say thank you to the Russian troops that were helping us out.
Where is your family now, and how are they?
Some of my cousins, aunts, and uncles are in North Ossetia right now, and they are safe. But my grandma and some of my aunts and uncles are still back there, and I don't know, we don't have any contact with them. I don't know if they're alive or anything.
Wow, I know your aunt is with you. This, I cannot even imagine. I mean, seeing a 12-year-old go through all of this, it must have been horrifying.
Yeah, it was horrifying for all of us. And main thing I wanted to say on the television, I want you to know to whom to blame on this conflict. That's Mr. Saakashvili, who started this war, and Mr. Saakashvili, who is aggressor, and who in 2 days, my people, Ossetian people, were killed and were under bombed, and 2,000 people were killed in one day, that's what I am against.
I would never cut you off. Unfortunately, a commercial break will take us there in 4 seconds, whether we like it or not.
I know that you don't want to hear that.
I'll be right back with you. Stay by. Back with us from San Francisco. This program ends in less than a minute, but I want to give you 30 seconds to complete your thought. So go ahead.
Yes, my house is burned in South Ossetia where I lived, we can blame only one person, and Georgian government. I'm not blaming Georgian people. I'm blaming Georgian government, and he has to resign.
That's certainly what the Russians want. If I had more time, you would get it, but I have but 5 seconds. Thank you both. The young girl's a hero in San Francisco, and understandably, there are gray areas in war.
That's what the Russians want you to think. So keep an eye peeled on MediaMonarchy.com for any updates on the U.S.-Russia proxy war in Georgia. Speaking of updates, I keep looking over to Google News, and the Obama VP PSYOP is building by the moment. Fox News right now at the top of Google News, waiting for Obama. Veep announcement builds to frenzied standstill, with breaths bated, and the hours passing before an expected public appearance together. Barack Obama readied an announcement by text message Friday of his vice presidential running mate from a list suddenly spiced by blah-bitty-blah-blah. Fevered pitch. A little more 9/11 news, my friends. This from the New York Magazine by way of roguegovernment.com. The 9/11 memorial to cost $1 billion. The Daily News brings us our first glimpse of what the new reassessed costs of the World Trade Center rebuilding might be. The September 11th Memorial and Museum, originally priced at $610 million, is now estimated at over $1 billion, a 65% increase. It also won't be ready until 2013 or 14, well after the 10th anniversary of the attacks, as had originally been promised. Some aging survivors and relatives are worried they won't live to see the day they can celebrate the opening of the memorial, because, of course, a lot of them are first responders dying from lies from the EPA. But the worst part is that there's likely to be a lot more bad news coming from Port Authority going into the fall as they reevaluate their schedules and budgets. This is just the beginning. a little historical footnote here coming from the Miami Herald. Bay of Pigs hero meets his maker. Grayston L. Lynch, a hero of the anti-Castro movement for his leadership in the Bay of Pigs invasion, where he fired the first shot of the battle, has died at 85 on August 10th. In his 1998 book, Decision for Disaster, Betrayal at the Bay of Pigs, Lynch detailed his role as CIA case officer in charge of the April 16th, 1961 operation. He fired the first shot of the three-day assault at a Jeep shining its headlights on Brigade 2506 Frogman landing at the Playa Grillon, then returned to his ship and shot down two Cuban fighter planes. Despite the invasion's disastrous failure, Lynch continued to direct clandestine assaults on the island from Miami until 1967. His anger at the Kennedy administration's decision to cancel air support never abated. And thus giving you the red herring setup that anti-Castro Cubans assassinated JFK. Now, I've got a video up from Brass Check TV, and it's about Codex Alimentarius criminalizing natural healing. I'm running low on time, so I'm actually not going to play the clip, but the full talk is available up there. They made cannabis, an important industrial and food plant, illegal. Now they're on the verge of making all plants illegal and or under corporate control. Codex Alimentarius, an oppressive set of law designed to control the world food supply, was cooked up by an ex-Nazi in 1962. We're on track for it to become the law of the land here in the U.S. on December 31st, 2009. So there's a video from Dr. Rima LeBeau of healthfreedomusa.org, and there's also another article below it from roguegovernment.com, Codex Commission Gains More Control Over Food. So check that out, but we're going to jump to naturalnews.com. Are you enjoying the fake Olympics? Are you enjoying watching the fake Olympics? By fake, of course, I'm referring to all the fabrications that have emerged since the opening of the event. Each day, it seems, brings news of yet another fabrication by China. So here's a short list of the fabrications that have been discovered so far. The weather is fake. We've gone over the cloud seeding. The free speech is fake. We just mentioned the women thrown in jail for applying to be able to go into the free speech cage. The opening ceremony was faked. We had the fake Olympic TV fakery fireworks. The internet access is censored. The Great Firewall of China. The singing was lip-synced by a pretty girl to replace an ugly girl. Swimmer Michael Phelps's food is fake. You should Google that and check that out. And the ages and passports are fake. And those are all stories you can check out. So I hope you're enjoying the fake Olympics. Most of the athletes are real, of course. Their remarkable feats of human artistry, strength, endurance, and athleticism are real, but the whole show surrounding it is fake, fake, fake. It's a fabricated show to keep the world occupied while your money, your health, and your future is stolen from you by the criminal institutions of the world, governments, corporations, etc., many of which are actually sponsoring the Olympics. A related story from the Washington Post, China's choreographed detentions. As he sat munching KFC with his captors at a Beijing police station last week, the Reverend Patrick J. Mahoney couldn't help thinking he was going to be used as a star in an upcoming Chinese propaganda film. Along with two other Americans, Mahoney had been dragged from Tiananmen Square just a couple of hours earlier as they attempted to unfurl a Jesus Christ is King banner and protest human rights abuses in China, including their forced abortions. Such public expressions of belief are illegal in China. Now Mahoney and the others were being subjected to a classic good cop, bad cop interrogation routine, in this case augmented with Chinese official photographers. With the good cop in charge, out came the cameras recording everything. When the bad cop came in, no shutters clicked. Fake. A little bit more, my friends, on what I've found more and more disturbing as time's gone by, are all the labs. Whether it's Plum Island or God knows what. We've got another set. It's BioWar Vaccines, Plum Island Biolabs, and even Enemy Mind Control. First, the aforementioned William Engdahl has an article up. Pentagon's alarming project, Avian Flu BioWar Vaccine. It's also on globalresearch.ca. There is reason to believe that sections of the international pharmaceutical industry cartel are acting in concert with the U.S. government to develop a genetically modified H5N1 virus substance that could unleash a man-made pandemic, perhaps more deadly than the aforementioned 1918 Spanish influenza pandemic, claiming up to 30 million lives. The genome of the 1918 pandemic, the so-called Spanish flu, was recently intentionally resurrected by the United States government from a frozen corpse that died of the flu in 1918 in Alaska. We covered that back in October. Because of that resurrection, both the avian flu and its, quote, vaccine are now a significant threat to public health. Returning again to the Hartford Courant, their Attorney General in Connecticut, Attorney General Richard Blumenthal, opposes upgrading Plum Island Biolab facility. He's opposing any plan to locate a new lab that would study some of the world's deadliest biological threats on Plum Island, 8 miles off the Connecticut coast. 5 mainland locations are on the U.S. Department of Homeland Security list to house the proposed, say it with me, National Bio and Agrodefense Facility. Expanding the existing Plum Island Animal Disease Center to meet the needs of the new facility is still a possibility, despite an Associated Press report that a site in Mississippi is at the top of the government's list. A site is expected to be chosen by the end of the year. And every time I mention Plum Island, I mention the book Lab 257 that proves that Lyme disease was cooked up in Plum Island. Hidden danger room yet again. Defense spooks say, let's control enemy minds. And we just mentioned this last week, but forget performance-enhancing drugs for soldiers. The next frontier is performance-degrading drugs for our enemies. See, and I even said that last week, before I'd ever read this article. If it's mad science in eugenics, there's the positive side as you try and build your master race. But then there's the negative eugenic side. With viruses and vaccines and race-specific bioweapons, or just good old mind control. So, starting again, forget performance-enhancing drugs for soldiers. The next frontier is performance-degrading drugs for our enemies. Rick Weiss at the Science Project blog, or rather, Science Progress blog, has just written a nice post about a just-released 150-page report from the National Research Council and the Defense Intelligence Agency that argues that the military needs to do a better job keeping up with neuroscience, in part so it can learn how to make our enemies stupider. As cognitive neuroscience and related technologies become more pervasive, using technology for nefarious purposes becomes easier. Those are just some quotes for you from our friends at the National Research Council and the DIA. There's links to that 150-page report about controlling enemy minds. Controlling the homeland minds here is always the mind-numbing array of terror drills. So let's look at San Francisco. This coming from KGO and brought to my attention from the awesome Greg Nixon at dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. San Francisco holds chemical terror drill.
Parts of San Francisco are shut down this afternoon for a terrorism drill. Police and firefighters are testing the city's response time in a theoretical weapons attack. Let's go live now to ABC7's Ann Makovic. She is in the financial district with the tales. Ann?
Yeah, they just reopened this street, Pine Street, one of several blocks closed down for the day. The fire department calling this a real public-private partnership as they got the owners of this building to let to allow them to let it fall victim to a mock emergency. This is a scene we don't want to repeat. The aftermath of a chemical attack in a downtown high-rise. Cyanide gas at 555 California, a building where they've also found an explosive device. Luckily, this is only a drill.
Each time we do this, the better off all of us are.
About 500 emergency responders from San Francisco, surrounding cities, the FBI, and the Army are participating in this mock release of weapons of mass destruction. But the fake trouble wasn't isolated to this building. There was also drama at One Post Street, a mock shooter on a rampage where another unidentified chemical had been released.
It's truly taxing the resources here in San Francisco, but that's what it's all about.
It all started at 10 this morning, and from some outsider perspectives, things were moving slowly. Students playing victims were left lying there for hours.
We know that things start out at a low level in these exercises today. Initially, where you'd want to go right in, you see victims on the ground. We need to make sure that we take a step back, pause for a moment, and decide what our entry is going to be like.
As the mock decontamination went on this afternoon, we were speaking with a local businessman who said that his company helped stop the situation before it even got to this point, or at least before so many people were chemically contaminated.
We have a breakthrough system that's designated by the Department of Homeland Security that will detect and identify the toxin in seconds and then automatically shut down the HVAC system so that the toxins are no longer circulated through the building.
The emergency responders we spoke with hadn't heard of this product. It was just released earlier this year. Another idea at a time when the government is being criticized about the availability of materials that could be used to make a dirty bomb. The Government Accountability Office released a report last month saying advances in security were moving too slowly and that customs officials don't have enough equipment to detect radiation. In the meantime, FEMA is spending $250,000 on this drill today.
The money is absolutely worth it because if we don't spend it now, it's going to cost us so much more later on.
And again, they did just leave the scene. Now all of the emergency responders involved in today's drill are combing through all of the information, and there's sure to be plenty of lessons learned. Live in San Francisco's Financial District, Ann Makovic, ABC 7 News.
And that video was swiped by yours truly and posted up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Another clip I'm going to have to skip, but the two latest episodes of Alex Ansari's Outside the Box are posted up, episode 164 and 165. 164 features an interview with Michael Sunanda, and on 165, it mentions that Alex discusses the facts about the current Russian and Georgian conflict, including how the U.S. and Israel are behind the invasion of South Ossetia. The question is, are Russia and the U.S. really at war, or are we seeing a deliberate staging of World War III? If so, how much longer until China enters the picture? And so, since we've mentioned that, here's one last little bit about U.S., Russia, Georgia. This from the DPA and InfoWars and others. Russia seizes arsenal of U.S. weapons in Georgia. Russian forces have seized a, quote, large arsenal of U.S.-made military weapons in the western Georgian city, including hundreds of assault rifles. So in the city of Sanaki, quote, we seized a large arsenal of weapons, including 664 U.S.-made M16 rifles. And there was also a number of M40 sniper rifles. And again, our man, General Anatoly Nogavitsyn, told a news conference in Moscow, there were 1,728 weapons total. So, meanwhile, along with that, this from the Deutsche Press Agency and the BangkokPost.com, Bush sends U.S. military to Georgia. President George W. Bush announced Wednesday that the U.S. military was heading for Georgia to deliver humanitarian aid, establishing an American presence in the region and sending a clear signal to Russia that it's time for the conflict to end. The first C-17 cargo plane landed late Wednesday in Georgia, and more planes and U.S. Navy vessels were on the way to provide food, medicine, and other supplies in a, quote, vigorous and ongoing effort to demonstrate solidarity with the Georgian people. Washington's plans don't include sending combat aircraft or warships, but the move brings the U.S. military into close proximity with Russian military forces, which are reportedly continuing to advance ever deeper into Georgian territory despite a declared ceasefire. So shipments of aid brought by the military. We'll see what happens next. God. As we're wrapping it up, we'll hit back on the Obama tip. And so, Jerome Corsi, who I believe I've played clips of on the show, has a new book out, and it's called Obama Nation. And he is the co-author of, was it Unfit for Command, the Swift Boating book of John Kerry. So he has a new Swift Boat book out against Obama. And if there's all kinds of stuff going on and trying to tear him down, one of the main ways they've tried to knock down Jerome Corsi is that he questioned 9/11. So this from Paul Joseph Watson, Obama fanatic slam author for questioning 9/11. An army of frenzied Obama acolytes have been busy attempting to smear writer Jerome Corsi, author of Obama Nation, by citing his skepticism toward the official 9/11 story, seemingly ignorant of the fact that such doubts are shared by the majority of Americans in polls. The New York Times also got in on the act with a sneering attempt to validate the attack on Corsi, and it's even being supported by Obama's own campaign staff. So there's links to the New York Times for you. Some of the updates that I don't have linked up just yet is now Corsi's backpedaling furiously, like Peter denying Christ. Corsi denies 9/11 truth. And so if he doesn't have the balls to stick by what he says, we brush him aside and move forward. Here's the meme that won't go away. CNN report asks, is Obama the Antichrist?
Just a joke or playing into fears? A campaign ad is causing a buzz on the internet. CNN's David Mattingly with the story.
When you listen to this John McCain ad, it might sound like Barack Obama has a messiah complex.
You will experience an epiphany, and you will say to yourself, I have to vote for Barack.
The McCain campaign says it's all in good fun.
Behold his mighty hand!
But not everyone's laughing. Some Democrats say the ad, which appears only on the internet, is infused with hidden messages to evangelical Christians. Messages that Barack Obama isn't the Messiah at all.
It reinforces things that they've been hearing around the internet, that maybe Barack Obama is, in fact, the Antichrist.
The ad's been viewed 1.2 million times on YouTube. A Google search for Obama and Antichrist returns an incredible 900,000 hits. One website is completely dedicated to the question, is Obama the Antichrist? 73% of the site's online polls say either yes or maybe. Could the McCain ad be saying the same thing?
That in 2008, the world will be blessed. They will call him the One.
Critics accused McCain campaign of trying to tap into biblical prophecy to stir evangelical voters, a group McCain has had difficulty reaching.
Going back to the classic Republican playbook of playing to these people's fears, trying to, you know, send a message to these folks that you really need to be careful. You really need to worry about this guy. He literally could be a cosmic antichrist figure. And for a lot of people, that may sound strange to believe, but there is a significant part of the American community that will take this stuff very seriously.
Democratic faith issues consultant Eric Sapp argues the McCain ad borrows ideas and visual imagery from the blockbuster Left Behind series. The books weave a tale of a modern-day antichrist, a young political leader who rises to power with a message of peace and unity and leads a world religion that proclaims we are God. That sounds a lot like this Obama clip used in the ad.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
The McCain campaign says it's just having some fun with what it calls Obama's tendency to get carried away with audacious statements. But since the release of the ad, Obama Antichrist internet traffic is up. Even the authors of the Left Behind books felt they had to speak out because they're seeing that question more and more often. Do they think Obama is the Antichrist? And each time they say the answer is no way.
The Antichrist will not be somebody who is suspected of being the Antichrist by anybody. If half the country thinks that that one of the candidates is the Antichrist, he's not the Antichrist.
A spokesman for the McCain campaign calls the ad lighthearted. One website takes the joke a little further, selling T-shirts and mugs showing the Obama symbol with a pair of horns. We're not sure how the candidate feels about that. We receive no reply from the Obama campaign. David Mattingly, CNN, Atlanta.
And I wish I could leave it on a somewhat lighthearted note like that. However, we're going to dip our toes into the mess that we will wade into as the DNC kicks off in Denver on the 25th. First from Raw Story, news crew crashes Denver's DNC concentration camp. During the 2004 Republican National Convention in New York City, over 1,700 protesters were taken into police custody in one of the most sweeping mass arrests in U.S. history. Many were held in Manhattan's infamous Pier 57 inside a warehouse which was contaminated with lead and asbestos. Some were held for days and without proper access to food, water, outside communication, or legal counsel. In Denver, police are preparing what a local political organizer calls a concentration camp, laying in wait for mass arrests anticipated during the upcoming Democratic National Convention. On Wednesday, a Denver CBS affiliate sent a news crew to crash the police department's improvised detention facility found in a warehouse owned by the city on the northeast side of town.
CBS 4 News has learned if mass arrests happen at the Democratic National Convention, those taken into custody will be jailed in a warehouse owned by the city of Denver.
Our investigator Rick Salinger discovered the location and got inside just today for an exclusive look. Protesters, Rick, not happy with the setup.
As you would imagine, Jim and Karen, they are not. This is a building filled with metal holding cells. We showed up at the facility unannounced today. The doors were wide open and we managed to shoot for several minutes until a Denver sheriff's captain asked us to leave.
The newly created lockup is inside a warehouse on the northeast side of Denver. Inside are dozens of metal cages. They are made out of chain-link fence material and are topped by rolls of barbed wire. Our presence here was not authorized nor welcome.
And this is a secure environment, a secured area, so we're concerned about how that's going to be utilized by people who potentially are trying to be disruptive.
Let them go! Let them go!
In past conventions, mass arrests have taken place. With Denver's jails already overflowing, new space had to be created and officers trained.
Each of these fenced-in areas is about 5 yards by 5 yards. There's a lock on the door. How long those arrested will be kept here is not known.
A sign on the wall reads, "Warning, electric stun devices used in this facility." We showed our video to Adam Young and Zoe Williams, leaders of groups that plan to demonstrate during the convention.
Very bare bones and also very reminiscent of a political prisoner camp or a concentration camp.
I mean, that's how you treat cattle. And then you showed the thing where it said, you know, stun guns, and you just changed the word gun for bolt. And, I mean, it's a meat processing plant.
The sheriff's department will not discuss the facility at this time.
But we want to make sure that we've got our game plan set. We want to make sure that the entire procedure is laid out. All the personnel know what they're supposed to do.
The plans were to keep this place a secret, at least for now.
The American Civil Liberties Union says it will ask the city of Denver how prisoners will get access to food and water, bathrooms, telephones, plus medical care, and if there will be a place to meet with attorneys. And the protesters, Jim and Karen, have already given this place a name. They're calling it Gitmo on the Platte.
One update from Raw Story. They got a letter from the ACLU in Colorado sent to the Denver Police Department regarding the protest detention facility. And there's a link there for you to read that letter. However, CBS did not break this story. The fine folks at WeAreChangeColorado.org broke it as they checked out the DNC detention camp. So from WeAreChangeColorado.org. At it again, trying to show everyone the tyrannical government oppression, We Are Change Colorado exposes the detention camps built for the DNC protesters. We Are Change members attempted to go into the camp to get exclusive footage and talk to the guards, but were strictly warned to stay away. They did manage to get some footage of the camp and detail some new information about its location and description. So there's about a 10-minute YouTube clip up. The audio wouldn't exactly translate for you here on the show, but that whole video is up. And so We Are Change Colorado has their work cut out for them as we head into the Denver DNC. So all we can do is hold our breath. I've tried to point out in the previous weeks and months all the strange goings on in Denver as they amp up. So all we can do is watch and hope and pray. And that's going to do it for episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 22nd, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, revereradionetwork.com. Also thanks to 95.3 KBFR in Boulder and 87.9 Ground Zero in Atlanta for running the show. Hit me up on MySpace and Dig and YouTube and all the social networking portals with Media Monarchy as your keyword, and of course iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org have the podcast for you. So I thank you, all you guys who get in touch with me, hit me up on IM or Skype or YouTube or what have you. I appreciate it. Please spread the word about the show. We got to wake people up to what's going on. I think we might be heading into some dark territory, my friends. So as I cast one last gaze to the top of Google News, still no word yet as I come to you about the great Obama VP hype. I'm overusing the word psyop, but that's what it is. It's all a war on consciousness. We need some discernment to look through what's going on. So yeah, I know one thing I'll be checking out at the DNC is Governor Joe Manchin of my home state of West Virginia will be speaking Tuesday at the convention, Tuesday evening, I believe 7 or 8 Eastern Time. And we'll just see.
All right, my friends, in my rush to get out of the house this morning, I forgot to bring my list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. So we had Polk.Army.Mil, Commander Army Information Systems Command in Lancaster, California. They're reading about U.S. financing former insurgents in Iraq. We had the Massachusetts Port Authority out of Newton, Googled martial law, Arkansas. The U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms, we're reading about the NRA moles, e-passports, VP Lieberman, NWO, and DC Madam. LexisNexis out of Miamisburg, Ohio, somebody there Googled elected to lead, not to read, Simpsons weightlifting. And they're, of course, talking about Rainier Wolfcastle in the Simpsons movie. New York Civil Liberties Union Googled NYPD Operation Sentinel PowerPoint, which is linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. U.S. Department of Energy in Montgomery Village, Maryland Googled NIST Plutonium. United States Antarctic Program in Aurora, Colorado, we're reading about the 500,000 plastic coffins in Georgia. Headquarters USAAISC in Arizona Googled Military Police at Immediate Response 2008. We had the same headquarters, hit me from blacklistednews.com. We had OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University, Googled Naomi Klein, Unitarian Church, Portland, December 12, 2007. And that audio is up on the page. Northern Trust Company out of Chicago, Googled pandemic training propaganda. Our private military contractor, Intel Friends, Booz Allen Hamilton out of Arlington, Googled top off SAIC. Someone at NBC Universal Googled East Coast Avengers rap. SAIC themselves Googled SAIC top off, reading about their conflict of interest. Fort Dix out of New Jersey, somebody there Googled Bible code and U.S. collapse. We had SAIC yet again with the same Google, SAIC conflict. We had the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office in Annandale, Virginia, Google SAIC conflict of interest. See, all the spooks are keyed into SAIC and their conflict of interest. Our old friends at the DEA finally returned for a visit. Someone at Sony Online Entertainment Googled East Coast Avengers. The Thiele Data Center in Sacramento, California Googled about their own military Marine recruiter Victor Sanchez Milan, Marine accused of sex with a minor. Someone at the San Antonio Express News Googled truant students GPS opponent, and they're reading about tracking students with GPS. Boeing Company out of Long Beach Googled Navy Armada disinformation. And finally, the University of Michigan Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan Googled Corsi Obama.
So, once again, I thank you for listening. My name's James. This has been episode 88 of MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.